So good morning. I just joked with Rabbi Tarradin that he spoke about chesed. I'm going to be speaking about vengeance, and hopefully we'll end up somewhere in the middle. What I just gave out, I tried to put a stack on every table, a stack of supplementary sheets that look like this. So if you haven't gotten it, chances are there, it's at your table. And if you need one, let us know, and we'll give one to you, because it's imperative. Couldn't let you get away with just 8 sources, because we need a little more. And I will do my best to finish by 11:30, because I know that people have to go home and do their things. Yes, ma'am. Okay, does everybody have a sheet? Everybody have a sheet? Everybody have a sheet? Anybody missing a sheet? We have. Yeah. Okay, so here's what we're going to do this morning. Here's what we're going to do this morning. I'm going to take a look with you at attitudes towards Jewish attitudes towards vengeance. And I don't think we're really going to come to a conclusion as much as we're going to do what's called the Sfira Klalit, sort of a nice general overview of different opinions that are out there, because there are many different opinions out there. But I do want to highlight a few perspectives or orientations to the question. So, without further introduction, let's start with what's on the front of your little packet. Okay? The pasuk that first comes to mind when I think about Jewish attitudes towards vengeance is not so much the question, a pasuk not relating so much to the question of whether we're allowed to take revenge, but more, what's our attitude when something, let's say, befalls our enemies or people who were trying to hurt us. I'm not going to talk about taking revenge, because I think that's sort of better left untouched in this political climate. But attitudes once vengeance is taken. So the pasuk is, or the psukim, it's in Mishlei Kaf Dalet, Proverbs 24. Binfol oyivcha al tismach. Do not be happy at the fall of your enemy. Uvikishalo al yagel libecha. And when he stumbles, don't let your heart be gladdened. Pen your eh Hashem, virave enav, lest God see, and it will be bad in his eyes, veishiv me'alav apo. And God will return, presumably from upon your enemy, God's anger. So what I want to do is I want to ask the following question. Who thinks that this pasuk applies only within the Jewish people? You're having a fight with somebody, and you win, so to speak. Don't be happy. Who thinks this is only for within the Jewish people? Be totally honest. This is not video recorded, this is audio recorded. We are on this staple booklet. We're just on the front sheet. No problem. All right, who thinks? Who thinks? Only within the Jewish people. Nobody? Somebody's lying. Chesed is good. Telling the truth is better. Maybe telling the truth is good. Chesed is better. I'm just not sure. But who thinks that it applies to anyone? Any human being on earth? Doesn't matter who did what to whom. So watch this. Let's look at number one. Let's see if you change your minds. Now, we're going to be flying through, you know, Talmudic times. We're talking 4th, 5th century, Babylonia, modern-day Iran. We're going to be looking at Rishonim, the medieval commentators, living in Spain with their Muslim counterparts, living in Christian lands in Ashkenaz with their Christian counterparts. So we're going to be taking sort of a whole look at the gamut. So let's start with the Gemara. The Gemara says in Megillah, and this is, I guess, apropos about a month before Purim, what happened when Haman came to Mount Mordechai on the royal horse, in the royal garb, and taken through the streets? What was Mordechai's reaction? Seems from the following Gemara, he totally nailed it. Amar Lehi. Haman says to Mordechai, Sakurachav, get up on the horse and right. Amar Lehi lo yachel na, sorry, I can't get up by myself. Tekafisha filai mimei ta'anita. Because I've been fasting for the fate of the Jews, can't get up, I don't have the strength, I need your help. Wink, wink, right? Gachin v'salik. So what happens is Haman goes down and Mordechai sort of gets a boost from him getting onto the horse. Kisalik, and as Mordechai is getting up, Ba'atbeg, he kicks Haman. Amarlei, and Haman says to him, what? Lo kituv l'chul, isn't it written for you people? Binfol lo yivcha al tisach. Don't be gladdened or don't be happy at the fall of your enemies. How could you kick me? How could you revel in this? Amarlei. So says Mordechai, Hani mile bi Yisrael. That is when it comes to Jews. Aval v'dinchu, but when it comes to you, Ketiv, it says, V'ata al bamotemo tidroch, and you shall trample on their high places. That's what he was doing, trampling. Have we gotten controversial enough yet for 5 to 11 in the morning? If it was the first year, it would be really controversial, because we all would wake up and say, did she really just say? Okay, I didn't say it, the Gemara said it. Look on your supplementary sheet. Okay, this one, just the single one. There are a number of ways in which the Gemara is actually explained or is shown in different versions and different iterations in different places. So let's look at 1a. A little bit clearer, you might say, well, maybe Mordechai was just saying we can't be happy at the vengeance of most people, but you're an Amalekite. Maybe that's what he meant. They did who for you, the Amalekite. But check out Pirkei Rabbi Eliezer, another version. Amar lo Haman. Haman says to him, one aleph. V'halo ketiv b'torah b'nfol yivcha al tismach. Isn't it written in your Torah? Don't be happy at the fall of your foe. Amar lo rasha b'Yisrael katuzet. Now this passage is about a Jew who is evil, who's wicked. But if it's for other people, if it's for outsiders who are trying to trample us, we trample them just as much. One bet, different version. Eliyahu Rabba. Actually, let's go to one gimel first, because it's not a version of the story. One gimel is another version of the story that the Marashah, 16th century commentator, living in Renaissance times, this is what he brings down. Amar Lei, he said to him, Haman said, Lo ketiv b'chul b'nfol yivcha al tismach. Don't be happy at the fall of your enemies. Midrash Yalkut, if you look in the Midrash called Yalkut that we have today, Yalkut Shimoni, it's a collection of Midrashim, Yalkut meaning a bag. She'az Amar Mordechai, actually what Mordechai said to him was, Arumimcha Hashem ki dilitani. God, I will raise you up because you have raised me up. Hainu lisloku v'la alot alav, v'lo simchat oivai li. This is not rejoicing. His answer was to Haman was, you'd be right if I were rejoicing. I'm not rejoicing. I'm just taking advantage of the fact that God is lifting me up. But I'm not rejoicing. Yes, I am doing a tit for tat. I'm not rejoicing. Very interesting. I'm going to skip one bet for a second. I want to look back on our sable sheet to number 2 and see a very different perspective that enters the halachic, the realm of halachic practice and started off in the Midrash as well. Let's take a look at 2. Sable Shibole Halachic at 13. Very different perspective from what we just saw. About Purim, right? You see that there's sort of a tension, and the Shibboleth Halakha didn't make this up on his own. The same midrash that we did in midrash, Haman and Mordechai, give you the same midrash, or give you this other midrash about, you know, you should definitely not say, and it's a midrash, it starts as a midrash, don't say full challah on Pesach, because people drown at sea, and we should care about that. Yet another midrash that people may be familiar with, if you look at number 3, Be'ota sha'ah, at that very moment yesterday, that climactic moment of crossing the Red Sea and the Egyptians drowning, Bikshu malachei ha'sharet lomar shir lefnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The angels wanted to sing a song before God. אמר להן הקדוש ברוך הוא, מעשה ידיי טובים בים ואתם אומרים שירה לפניי. So God says to them, are you kidding me? My handiwork is drowning at sea and you're going to sing a song? Now what's the obvious question? The Jewish people were singing a song. God didn't stop them. What exactly is this Midrash trying to tell us? So by the way, just to get a sense of what people are feeling, because I see a lot of, you know, angry faces. Just to get a sense of what people are feeling. Who goes with the Mordechai approach? Extreme, extreme. You have enemies, they do bad to you, you get them back, and enjoy it. Anyone go with the extreme? I'm going to raise my hand to make it safe. Anybody go with the extreme? Right, let's be realistic here, right? I mean, we could look in our own times, in our 20th centuries. Naturally, I could see it on people's faces when we were reading that. I could see that what people were thinking. Okay. No, you can see it. You know, people have a visceral reaction. It's very colorful. Midrash, a very colorful sugya. Great. Who relates to, let's say, this approach of, no, actually, it's not that we're happy. We take our revenge the same way anybody else takes their revenge. We'll call that the one gimel. That really Mordechai said to Haman, I'm not happy, I just, you know, God's lifting me up and I'm taking advantage. Who goes with that? Okay, you got a feeling. Don't be embarrassed, it's entirely their opinion. I'll raise my hands and make you feel good too. Okay? The third, who goes with, Masei Adai Togin Bayam Batanari Shir Lefanai, come on. My people or human beings are drowning at sea, and you are saying songs before me. Who goes with that? It's very politically correct, obviously, so it's very safe to raise your hand. Right? Great. So what I want to do for the remaining time is I want to try to figure out what exactly does this pasuk of Binfola Yivka Al Tisnach, what does it mean? Don't be happy. Why? Why? Is it because it's bad? Mido, is it something from God's perspective? What? Why? And I want to show you that there are actually a number of different perspectives. The first one that I want to show you is sort of the perspective of God. Okay? Notice that the pasuk after the Kol Yitzchak does not say, lest God sees you and is upset with you and returns his anger from upon your oppressor. And where is God going to put that anger? We'll find out in a second. On another oppressor. So we know what your commentary would be. Let's take a look. I want to show you the Ralbag, Gersonides in the 14th century. And we're not going to leave with the conclusion. I just want to show you how rich the field is and try to maybe speculate as to why that is. So let's take a look at the Ralbag. Number 4 on the staple sheet. The Ralbag, Gersonides, 14th century, he says, Pen Yireh Hashem, lest God should see the next pasuk after Binfola Yivcha Al Tismach, lest God should see Roa Tchunatecha Bazeh Ha'inyan, your sort of a bad trait in being happy, V'yashiv Me'al Oyivecha or Yivcha Apo, and God returns God's anger from on your oppressor, V'yashivehu Alecha, and then puts it on you, Mipnei Roa Tchunatecha, because of a bad trait. Ki ein ra'ui sheyismach b'ra, because it's not good to be happy when bad things happen. Okay? And this is his reasoning. You ready for this? Ki Hashem yitbarach b'rchik mitziuto, because God's self, removes himself from l'fi ma she'efshar as much as he can when anything bad in the world happens. U'ma she'yagia yagia b'mikra. And it all happens by chance. Wow. Oh my gosh, wow. Nobody's wowed by that? Wow. Right? So the Rabbah says you shouldn't be happy when your enemy falters, because even God is not really involved in a direct way in that. So if God doesn't want a piece of it, you certainly shouldn't want a piece of it. Take a look on your supplementary sheet. I'm going to try to explain what the Rabbi is saying. You're looking for me. This is a Maimonidean perspective. This is a Maimonidean perspective that the Rabbi picks up on. That is, you're looking for, hey, let's read it. Divine providence is, in my opinion, a consequence upon the divine intellectual influence. Understand thoroughly my theory. I do not ascribe to God an ignorance of anything or any kind of weakness. Those who are perfect in their perceptions of God, whose mind is never separated from him, always enjoy the influence, I'm going to substitute providence, of God. But those who, perfect in their knowledge of God, sometimes turn their mind away from God, enjoy the divine presence, or the presence of divine providence, only when they meditate on God. When their thoughts are engaged on different matters, divine providence departs from them. When he is separated from God, God is separated from him. Then he is exposed to any evil that might befall him, for it is only that intellectual link with God that secures the presence of providence and protection from the sea of chance. Hence, sometimes this influence is separated from the good and pious man, or it does not reach at all those who are evil and imperfect. In these two cases, what happens is due to chance. This is really a wow. The Ralbag, and this is a very Maimonidean approach, very very pervasive among the rationalists, the medieval rationalists, which is, as much as you think about God, that's how much God thinks about you, basically. So if you're evil and you don't think about God, God doesn't think about you. Whatever happens to you happens because you're out there in the sea alone. So if bad things don't happen to you, it's by chance. If bad things do happen to you, it's by chance. So here you have, right, not something that we necessarily relate to, and then you look at the world and you say, well, not everybody is an intellectual thinking about God all the time, and certainly we have problems. But that's the way that they go. So when he looks at Binfola Yivka Altasmach, he says, by the way, God's not really involved there either. So don't think that you and God are allies. Don't be happy. It happened. But it's not something that God is celebrating. It's not something that you should celebrate. It's an interesting perspective. A totally different perspective on this Binfola Yivka Altasmach. Totally different perspective, I would say, comes from one bet on your supplementary sheet. And that is, it's unbelievable. Forget the Mordechai and Haman story. Let's talk about Jew against Jew. Wow. Take a look. One bet, Eliyahu Rabbah, a midrash. Harei Omer, Binfola Yivka Al Tismah. And it's a typo, but that's in the manuscript. You know, it says in one place in Mishlei, don't be happy at the downfall of your enemy. Ulahalan Omer, and in another place in Mishlei, it says, Ba'avod Risha'im Rina. When Risha'im, when evil people are perished, it's joyous. So, Ketzagit Kaibushne, Kubim Halal. How can you have both of these at once? Betalmid Chacham, Shenitzkacha Ba'alacha Hayom. If there's someone who you're arguing with in the base medrash, and they beat you in the argument today, uvalia doza bar l'machar, and the next day somebody beats that person in an argument, al tismach lo. That's the kind of thing where you're not happy. But, why? Because pen yira Hashem v'rabeinah, because then God sees you're just being competitive. That's what it's about. It's not about the actual pursuit of truth. It's just, you're just being competitive. Im ra'ita achad miYisrael sheratzeh beratzo shel chavero, zehu rasha gamur. But what about the pasuk of Ba'avod Rasha'im Rina? That when people who are evil are lost, it's happy, it's joyous. That's people, even Jews. Right? I'm not whitewashing anything for anyone, even though it's 11 o'clock in the morning. I'm really giving you up the whole 9 yards here. Even Jews, if they're trying to hurt other Jews, they now fall under the category of the enemy, and there's no application of the fully of Ha'al-Tisam. Wow. Okay. I'm going to stop saying wow and come up with another word. Because it really is all absolutely unbelievable. Two Aleph on the same sheet. Yet another perspective. In fully of Ha'al-Tisam. What is it? Is it God's creatures are God's creatures are falling into the sea, so God's upset and you should be too? Is it that God's providence is not involved there and God's not happy about it and you shouldn't be either? Is it, no, of course you're allowed to be happy. It's totally understandable, exactly as you're saying, Ba'avod Rasha'im Rina. Anyone who's trying to hurt the Jewish people, even from within, anyone who's trying to hurt the Jewish people, we rejoice when that threat is gone in whatever way. Or, look at Rabbi Babi Nabar Denura, 2 Aleph, Pen Yir'eh V'Rabbeinav, lest God will see and it will be bad in God's eyes. Sha'asito bilvavecha ki'ilu hu shluchacha lemalot ta'avatecha. Because you have made God your shaliach, you've made God your messenger in your heart to do what he wanted you to do. You've used God. Wow. No, not wow. That's amazing. You've used God. A lot of the implication of Binfola Yivcha Al Tismach is exactly as you two ladies said, from the divine perspective. And look one more on at 3a. Even the way that the Mefarshim explained Binfola Yivcha Al Tismach, it's almost, they take it away from the person and they really talk about the Gezeirah, the decree that God is making, which is, Kishir Shelo Yismach Adam Al Zerat Hashem, Afilu Yiyeh Oivo. A person should never be happy when God has to make a decree against anyone, even if it's an enemy of that person. Very divine perspective. The human perspective is, of course, someone is attacking you. And I have to say, I saw this very clearly, and I'm going to watch my words very, very, very carefully. I saw this very clearly during the incursion in Gaza. You had a lot of Jews who were falling on the side of, you know, it's a shame that people have to die when they're innocent. You have some people falling on the side of, you know what, I can't think about the individuals, I really just think about the safety of the Jewish people. You have some people who were distinguishing between innocents and members of Hamas or people who were harboring Hamas. These things are very real emotions that people have and you can't really legislate them. But what I thought was amazing is I consistently would hear, you know, I really consistently would hear, you know, it's a shame that anyone innocent had to die. And I very rarely would hear anybody even excited about the prospect of, you know, individual people dying even when they're guilty, which I thought was just very interesting. We're very peaceful people. But you notice in our sources, we have the gamut. We really have the gamut. I want to do one more thing about Binfola Yivcha Al Tismach to complicate it a little. And I want to get back to the question of Azish. How is it that the Jewish people sang? Are they vindicating what Mordechai did, anachronistic? Or are they saying, maybe there's some strange thing? You definitely didn't think we were going here this morning, but sources are sources, right? Let's take a look at 5. This is really something that I don't think people have realized. And when I say people, I think the average person who davens Shmona Esrei every day doesn't realize it. Shmuel HaKatan Omer, he says, Binfolo Yivcha Al Tismach, Ubekishalo Al Yadiel Ibecha Pen Yireh Hashem, Urabi Nevi Yeshiva Pnei Lalapo. Shmuel HaKatan used to say, don't be glad, he actually didn't say it, it's in Mishlei, Shlomo said it. What does it mean that Shmuel HaKatan used to say? This is something that he talked about a lot. It was important to him. Don't rejoice at the fall of your enemies. And yet it's the same Shmuel HaKatan, check this out, in number 6. Tanu Rabbanan, rabbis taught, Shimon HaBakuli, his ear Shimon Esrei Brachot, Lifnei Rabban Gamliel, Ala Seder B'Yavna. So Shimon HaBakuli, he set up our Shimon Esrei, our 18 Brachot, our 18 blessings in the Amidah, in front of Rabban Gamliel, in Yavna. Amar Lehem Rabban Gamliel L'Chachamim, and Rabban Gamliel says, wait a second. We need one. Klum Yesh Adam Sheyedeh L'Takim Birkat Haminim. Is there anyone who can figure out, there anyone who can compose a bracha, a blessing against the heretics? And the heretics, we assume, were sectarians, were the proto-Christians, were Jews who were becoming Christian in the early stages. Is there anyone who can compose a bracha that will say, we hope that they're beaten, we hope that they perish, we hope that it ends? And who stands up? What? Right? 1 second. Who stands up? Shmuel HaKatan. Shmuel HaKatan, who's the one who says, Binfola Yivcha Al Tismach, don't be happy. It's that same Shmuel HaKatan who gets up and gives us the Lamal Shin. And if you read the bracha, you will see what it is asking for is an end. What did you say? Exactly. Meaning to end things. Complicates the message further. You know, people sit in this audience and they're reading these different perspectives, and you say to yourself, well, how exactly, if you're going to say in Fola Yitfa Al Tismach, don't be happy, that that applies to any human being, how exactly does one do that in their world? I mean, you have to protect yourselves, you have to defend yourselves, especially in the state of Israel. This is a much more sort of potent issue than anywhere else because they have their own army. They have to do things. So how are we supposed to feel about it? I think Shmuel HaKatan gives us an idea, which is, yes, you have to defend yourself. You're fighting for the survival of your nation, and yet it's the same Shmuel HaKatan who would walk around and say, but don't be too happy about it. We don't need to wave flags like some other people do when people are dying in the streets. That's not the way we do things. Even if we're happy on the inside. It's just different perspective seems to be what Shmuel HaKatan is trying to say. The issue of Az Yashir. Before we get to the issue of Az Yashir, I want to show you something interesting, which I think will make a lot of sense, especially to the people who said we like the Mordechai perspective. Look at number 9 in the staple sheet. This is a professor, Yisrael Yuval. He's an Israeli scholar, and he's done a lot of work on different texts among Ashkenazim and Sephardim that discuss the coming of Mashiach. And these different texts say very different things. So you take a look at number 9. We have two positions. The former, what I shall call vengeful redemption, and the latter, proselytizing redemption. The former is expressed in an Ashkenazi source, the latter in a Provençal Spanish one. Was the messianic world of Ashkenazic Jewry characterized by anticipation of total vengeance against the Gentiles? I would maintain that this was in fact the case. Although here and there we find Ashkenazim speaking more moderately, integrating into their thought the notion of proselytizing redemption. In other words, redemption via Mashiach that involves everyone converting to Judaism or believing in Hashem. Let's look at two side by side, an Ashkenazic source and a Sephardic source. On the left, this final redemption will involve the ruin, destruction, killing, eradication of all nations. They and the angels who watch over them from above and their gods, the Holy One, blessed be He, will destroy all the nations except Israel. On the right, at the end, there will be great signs and wonders that He will do with us, lifting us up so that all the nations return to our faith and declare what they inherited from their fathers was a lie. In other words, they'll convert. For all the people who will turn to the faith that they honor God through the many wonders, they will see when the Lord will deliver us from His exile. Yuval goes further. He says, if you look, let's say, at the current behavior of these different communities, in Germanic communities, in Ashkenazi communities, where they had lived through the Crusades, where they had lived through very traumatic things, and they really did have enemies, they used to burn Haman in effigy. That was part of their civic love. That was part of the way that they did it. That was expressing their happiness, what they were doing. You look in Spanish circles, where they got along very well with their neighbors, and their neighbors got along very well with them until a certain point. They didn't do that. It was just much friendlier. So some of, I guess, what I want to say this morning is that I think one of the reasons why we have so many different perspectives is because we live through so many different things. And different communities will feel different ways about different things. And I don't think that there's any one definitive answer. I have to say, I don't think there's any one definitive answer. And I think that it would be cruel to try to give one to either side. But I think it's very important to recognize that everyone who's giving an answer, giving a suggestion, they're all working within the sources to try to do their best to do what the Torah, what Judaism wants from them. So I want to end with Az Yashir and a little bit more than that. So great tshuva, it's number 7 in the simple sheet. So sorry for all the back and forth. There's a great tshuva from Rav Ovadia Yosef. He was asked, you know, I don't get it. I know nobody asked this question, but the Gemara that we saw in Sanhedrin, God told the angels not to sing. So the Jewish people sang, well, okay, and then we have Hallel, which is to commemorate that. That's in the past, but let's say Yom HaAtzma'ut, Israel Independence Day, which certainly came at the expense of casualties on both sides. What about that? Can we say Hallel on Yom HaTzma'ut. How can we institute Hallel on Yom HaTzma'ut? And he says something rather beautiful, which I think is really the key to the compromise between the positions. Number 7, and I translated it into English just so that there's no mistake about it. And see the words of the Chida, Rav Azulai in the 18th century, who wrote, "That which we say in the Gemara, my handiwork is drowning in sea, and you recite praise, Ma'asei Adai Tzorim Bayam Batem Omrim Shira," right, the Gemara in Sanhedrin, only refers to the moment of anger, at the very time of the judgment and destruction. But once the judgment has been meted out and the miracle has been revealed, it is permissible to sing. An interesting kind of compromise between the two. Not perfect, but an interesting compromise. And I have a good friend, Akiva Block, now Rabbi Akiva Block, a good friend who told me in number 8, he actually pointed something out to me from the source of Azashir from yesterday that really support this perspective. So if you look at number 8, it's right before we have Azashir, Vayosha Hashem Vayom Hahu et Yisrael Miyad Mitzrayim, God saved on that day Israel from the hands of Egypt, Vayar Yisrael et Mitzrayim et al Sfatayam, and the Jews saw the Egyptians dead on the other side of the riverbank. Vayar Yisrael et Yabek Elah, and then again, the Jews saw the great hand, Asher Asa Hashem in Mitzrayim, that God had used or done in Egypt. Vayiru Ha'am et Hashem Vayaminu Vashem of Moshe Abdel. And they feared God, and they believed in God and Moshe his servant. And only then, after that intervening pasuk of Lamed Aleph, was there Az Yashir Moshe Bnei Yisrael Tashir Azel Vashem. That at that moment, then they sang this song to God. And they said, etc., etc., etc. What's interesting is that the song is full of celebrating the destruction of the Egyptians. I mean, it's absolutely saturated with that imagery. And yet, there's something to the fact that they waited a minute. There's something to that fact. Now, I'm going to read an Elie Wiesel quote that may sort of bristle some people. But it's his right as a survivor, I think, to have his own perspective, more than it's anyone's right who is not a survivor to critique it. I think it's interesting, and it does show you how different people come out with different approaches. That is, he says, and now 60 years later, you who represent the entire world community, listen to the words of the witness. Like Yirmiyahu and Iyov, we have cried and cursed the days dominated by injustice and violence. We could have chosen vengeance, we did not. We could have chosen hate, we did not. Hatred is degrading and vengeance is demeaning. They are diseases, their history is dominated by death. That's a totally different perspective, which is, and Elie Wiesel is not exactly opposing, but that's a totally different perspective of someone who says, well, you know what, before you call the smock, what that means to me is I'm not going to lower myself to that standard. But as you can see from all of our sources and from looking at the differences between Spanish and Ashkenazic, Spanish and Germanic, looking at the different perspectives, even on something that seems to be a very simple, straightforward midrash about Mordechai and Haman, even from that, we come out with kind of reality, which is different people are going to have different feelings. And as long as you're trying to do what you're supposed to do, as long as it's not just no holds barred, but it's something that reflects the Tzelem Elohim that a Jew and that a human being is supposed to have, then you're within it. You're still within it. I happen to really like the perspective of they waited. God saved them. They saw people dying. They waited a second, appreciated what had happened for them. And then they sang a song, even though that song, by definition, has to include the death of the Egyptians. Want to end with this very last thing. I know we've been ending 3 times, but we still have till 11:30. Check out 3 bets on our supplement machine. So, it's interesting. The Midrash, the Gemara in Sanhedrin, seems to claim that the angels wanted to sing Shira, wanted to sing a song. How do we know that? Where did that come from? Well, let's take a look. When do they want to sing song? Even better. Three better. Efshar shedarash, it's possible that the drasha is as follows. The exegesis is as follows. V'lo karam ze el ze kol halayla. Right? Remember, when the Egyptians are running after the Jews, it says they didn't get close to each other the whole night. They never actually had contact. The Jews were always one step ahead. That language of v'lo karam ze el ze, reminiscent maybe of something that we call Kedusha, the kara ze el ze, the amar, the angels call to each other and say, let's take a look. Al shem hakatuv the kara ze el ze the amar. Maybe it's a midrash connecting these two, which talks about the angels. Dichtiv gabe shirat malachei hasharet b'chol yom. A pasuk that refers to the way the angels sing each day. Umilat vikara, and vikara ze el ze, how is it connected to lo karav ze el ze? One means call, one means close. Well, actually, milat vikara, milashon pigisha upigia ze la ze, beomram shira. Maybe vikara means they interact with each other, meaning they actually meet up, like vikarav. They meet up with each other in song. Ka'amar hacha shelo kervu az zelaze. And therefore, the pasuk, though this is not the plain meaning, that they didn't get close to each other, it's really about the Egyptians and the Jews, but the drasha is the angels didn't get close to each other to sing shira to God, the daily shira that they were used to singing. Lomar Shiva, to say the Shiva. V'shuv matzati karov lezeh v'tanchuma ayin sham. I found something close to that in the Midrash Tanchuma. Check over there. V'inyan shira zo lichora. And what was this song that they wanted to sing? Lichora shehi shirat az yashir. It seems that the angels wanted to sing az yashir, what the Jews were singing. And God said no. Aval b'midrash Rabba amru, in the midrash it says she'amar Kadosh Baruch Hu l'malachim, that God said to the angels, az yashir Moshe u'bnei Yisrael tchila ve'achar kach malachim. What's az yashir, then they will sing? Let the Jews sing first, you sing later. Which I think alludes to the human perspective on things and the divine perspective. You may not have a right to sing, but the people for whom salvation has now come to fruition, they have a right to sing. So the sources are many. I want to leave you with just sort of the outline, which is we have the extremes. Bin Foliyev Ka'al Tismach may refer even to enemies, quote unquote, from within. Bin Foliyev Ka'al Tismach may only refer outside of the Jewish people. Bin Fol Oyiv Ka'al Tismach may actually not really refer to too much at all. And then when we talk about where it applies, why does it apply, we have sort of 2, 3, and 4, which is a concern from the divine perspective, not saying that to Ibn Yama Tekim Shira. Perhaps the divine perspective is, you can't sing Shira, but human beings can, because they're experiencing this firsthand. Perhaps the divine perspective is, don't use me as a tool for your own desires, try to separate it, as superhuman as that is. But certainly a lot of concerns from God's perspective, I think partially because the next pasuk is, Hen yireh Hashem, lest God will see, so it implies that God is unhappy about it. The third, we sort of have a balance that Shmuel HaKatan shows us, and maybe one version of the story with Mordechai and Haman shows us, which is, there's nothing wrong with protecting yourself, there's nothing wrong with defending yourself, even if unfortunately it's going to cause, you know, destruction in the world. That's kind of part of the just defending yourself, being safe, keeping yourself safe. But at the same time, it's not something that we necessarily revel in to that degree. And the fourth is just, it may really be a matter of where you are and in what time. If you're a Jew who lived through the Crusades, it just may seem impossible. If you're a Jew who's living in a wonderful, philosophically rich environment, and you're doing great in America, and nobody just vandalized your synagogue last week, you may feel differently. But everyone's entitled to that perspective, so long as it's a perspective that's thought out. So long as it's a perspective that has to do with our relationship to Hashem, to Torah, and making sure that we have a gut check. And I actually liked when Rav Terrigan was saying towards the end, when he was saying we don't follow other people's standards. Sometimes I think we do, and I think Rav Terrigan would say the same thing. But I think in this respect, we really don't. You look around, and the way that Jews react to things, it's so, and it's not because we're apathetic, God forbid. The way we react to things is so thought out, it's so emotionally intuitive and insightful that even an Elie Wiesel position, you don't have to take the Elie Wiesel position to still be a thought out and insightful Jew. So hopefully between chesed and vengeance, we end up somewhere in the middle, but either way, they're all part of this divine rubric of trying to make us better people. Any questions? And anyone can leave if they want. Yes. Great. 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 I'm going to say this out loud because I think it's an important question. The question of Amalek. I think that the question of Amalek may be a little bit of a different question. And there are a lot of people today, including Rabbi Norman Lamb, who just wrote an article on this actually, in 2002, the question as to whether Mechiyat Amalek, killing off all of Amalek, applies to everyone or just to your enemies within Amalek in this day and age. Right, or who Amalek is, but meaning, I'm not saying anything against not killing off your enemies. If anything, I'm saying you have to protect yourself. It's a question of then how do you react when innocents are killed? How do you react even when people who are not innocent are killed? What exactly is your thought process? You know what I mean?
Yes. I know, I'm sorry. I added a lot.